faster, smarter. The next generation of the human race is...
living in my basement?
Craig, you are way too excited to have our next guest. I'm excited because I'm a fan of so much of his work. We have Hal Sparks on the line. You know him from Talk Soup, from Queer as Folk, and apparently Lab Rats, which Hal, will you be offended if I'm not familiar with Lab Rats?
Not at all. Do you have an 11-year-old?
Well, I have Craig. Yeah. I have my producer.
I'm a 30-year-old, and I happen to catch Disney shows from time to time.
All right. Well, we're the one to catch. I think we're the one that actually has adult-friendly jokes.
I agree a lot with that, yeah. And I think that's definitely your character as well that gives me a lot of that sweet, sweet hilarity that I'm looking for.
Yes, the hidden Warner Brothers-y kind of jokes from the 1950s that you were like, how in the world were they able to say that on television? We somehow managed to pull it off with great regularity. There are literally some jokes that made it into the pilot that I'm not even sure I can repeat on the radio, because if I explain them, I might get in trouble.
Really?
So that's... Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a smart show. All of our writers really come from that 70s show.
Well, yeah, that's so, the thing is a lot of the shows that write, a lot of the writers for teen, like, you know, the young adult shows, because my son watched Good Luck Charlie, and that seemed to have a lot of fun stuff on it that you're like, oh, this isn't as hokey as I thought it was going to be. I never sit down and watch a lot of them because I'm like, ugh. Mm-hmm. Once you have Thomas the Tank Engine running for hours, it's hard to trust anything that comes on your television next for your kids.
I can't believe George Carlin did that.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. Yeah, he was Mr. Conductor.
And Ringo, by the way.
That's right. you know, the reality is that I think kids' programming is getting smarter and smarter because both the parents are watching it and they are taking their kids to see movies that over the years have gone from kind of saccharine, sweet, you know, Disney-esque, you know, super protective Beauty and the Beast kind of stuff, to, you know, Toy Story and those kind of things, which are sharper, quite frankly, rude, you know, ruder, if that is a word, more rude than you would expect in children's programming. And I think everybody's racing to catch up and match that, even though we keep forgetting kids have brand new brains. You don't have to do that. They're still amazed by a balloon. So, when you chase a grown-up audience, I think that's what the reality of, you know, all superhero movies have just come to roost on the fact that Deadpool made more than all of them put together, practically, which really just proves that superhero movies are for emotionally stunted adult males.
I don't know. I enjoyed Deadpool a whole lot, although I do...
emotionally stunted adult females. I will certainly group you into that.
I'll embrace that.
I
loved it. I totally loved it. I was super impressed, but I also thought that the reason why it was so good is it got its demographic right.
It definitely did. Well, it's weird for me because I've been a stand-up comic in Chicago for a long time, and I think we must have missed each other just barely. But T.J. Miller used to open for me, and I it's weird for me to say that out loud. Like T.J. Miller and Hannibal Buress were my opening acts. I'm like, I'm gonna stay here in Chicago and just see how things work out.
Yeah, well, it's like it's funny with bringing up T.J. Miller in Deadpool, because he and Ryan Reynolds almost had the same vocal cords. There's so many times in that movie where you can't even tell who's talking. What an odd casting choice. You would have at least, during the screen testing, went, well, they got good chemistry, but which one of you just said that?
I have to agree with that. Yes, Brennan?
He rolled into Sketchfest, Comedy Sketch Festival in January. Yeah. January, and it was day of. It was so exciting that their group was coming. And, you know, everybody has a tech rehearsal the week before, and they have a tech sheet, and you go through. He rolls in, like, 30 minutes before his show, and it's like notebook paper. It's like, I don't know. Keep the lights on. We're just going to do some stuff. And they were the funniest show.
Totally. There's a level of freedom, you know, that I think is what's really appreciated with him and with that crowd. So, absolutely.
And I did not realize that you had you moved around a little bit when you were young, but landed here for high school and went to New Trier.
Yeah, absolutely. They straightened me out. I think that I always thank New Trier to a great degree, not just because they had a great theater department and it really took the magic out of entertainment and just put the blue collar kind of work ethic into it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's nothing, you know, especially in comedy, you don't really get discovered. You know, any more than somebody discovers someone trying to jimmy their way into your car. You know,
like, right.
You know, you have to keep at it, and it's got a regular kind of a ladder to it. If you keep, you know, going and you don't give up, So, you know, you start open micing, working for free, which is the effectively interning, and then you either host or you act as a 5-minute opener, or you do guest sets, and then you feature, and then you build up to the point where you have your first hour, and then you refine that hour, and you realize that was a terrible hour, and now you have a great hour. And then after you love that hour for an hour, you know, for a year, you hate that hour too. That, you know, and then you realize, oh, I'm a stand-up now. 6 years, 7 years, 10 years later, whatever.
Exactly. Right. With this
There's no magic though. It's not like you're sitting on a, you know, drinking a phosphate at a, you know, drugstore counter, and someone goes, "Kid, you got moxie." Like, it doesn't.
No, it does not happen.
You don't wake up one day and understand that you just instantly did it, because that is my last 30 years was aiming towards that.
No, so sorry, it's not the way it works out.
Well, you know, I just, in Kentucky, where I grew up, you know, until I was 14, I loved stand-up and I loved the idea of it, but I had no idea that was a job that you could actually do. I thought comedy albums were like Birdsong, like somebody just had a microphone on a guy who was being funny at a party or something. Like, I couldn't wrap my mind around someone getting a paycheck for that. And then when I moved to Chicago, it really did have this kind of normalization to it, like, oh, it's like working at any company, kind of, but it might take a while, but you'll work your way up, easier than law school to some degree. Okay, let's just do that. And it really was that simple. And I think the reason why it happened so well for me at the rate that it did, and, I mean, the 90s were a lonely decade. I call them the Sisyphus years, but they, by comparison, career-wise, it happened relatively quickly. And I think that was because I still got 20 years left on my phase one plan, because
right.
I think it should take way longer. And if I'm Anthony Hopkins, when anybody gives a crap who I am, you know, at that age, then so be it. So I'm really patient about it, you know.
Well, that was one of the things. That was one of the things. I don't know if you know Carla Felicia, but she told me, we were working at Grand Forks, and she was one of the comics that told me, "Look, this isn't a sprint; it's a marathon, and you have to be patient with it." And that's always that kind of advice has always helped me out. You mentioned that you listened to albums when you were a kid, even before you moved to Chicago. Who were you listening to?
Well, my dad worked on musical instruments as a hobby and sort of a sideline job, and he did fretwork for Bela Fleck from Bela Fleck and the Flecktones and
excellent
and
blues, bluegrass,
like that kind of and so we were around that whole crowd all the time, and a friend of his had two mandolins he needed fixed, and my dad fixed both of them, but the guy couldn't afford to pay him, so he gave him a crate of records in exchange, and it was like one full milk crate was just comedy records.
Wow.
And and so in that was, Shelley Berman, Life of the Primate, which is sketch comedy, a collection of Groucho Marx solo shows, Godfrey Cambridge, I had all the Godfrey Cambridge records, Lenny Bruce, Richard Pryor. And to me, the pivot that really changed me from reading and remembering or, you know, memorizing stuff and then just repeating it to my friends was listening to probably Toledo Window Box by Carlin and Hank's Place and Black Ben the Blacksmith by Richard Pryor, because on those he's he's turning these stories out where he's playing all the characters and he's delivering a performance that most people don't even know of Richard Pryor's stand up except for Live on the Sunset Strip, which he was basically TMZing himself.
Right.
But I really got attached to that play storytelling one man show almost behavior that he did, where he was really constructing these worlds, and that fascinated me, and that made me start doing my own stuff my friends and around my circle.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, he would do these characters and get into these beautiful bits that
Mudbone. Was I used to do Mudbone for my mom, as a 10-year-old, as a 9-year-old, you know. And that character was so rich and so full and so just charming that it made me go, okay, and you could tell most of the time it would just come out as improv. He definitely had stories and he definitely had stuff, but there were lines that magically came from the character as he was doing them. That's the root of improv. That's why I went to Second City when I got to Chicago too, because that's what I wanted to adapt to and learn was, no matter what I'm doing up there, as long as I'm invested, it's always going to be funnier. And that's probably why TJ and his group, what you were talking about earlier, why they were the funniest, is because they just got into their groove and stayed there. And I've always been fascinated and excited by that kind of performance.
Well, you can't mess up when there's no script. I feel so much safer behind nothing, like just like than coming out with a script.
You can you might not be able to mess up, but you can whiff like crazy.
Yes.
You can just swing and a miss. It is definitely still a tightrope walk, except the tightrope goes in whatever direction you choose. You can change the direction, which is the one difference from doing a scripted piece.
Well, in particular with stand-up, I think, too.
That's valid. Yeah, you have to be on your toes because it's so interactive. You're staring in the face of the people who are reacting to you, either messing up or pulling something off that you thought was a mess up, and then holy crap, that worked. Of course I meant to do that.
That's right. And there's also a lack of total, like modern audiences, curiously enough, have a total lack of investment in actual skill. A lot of times they just want to see you mess up, and the messing up is actually the act now.
Yeah.
So many people just play nervous or play, that didn't work, as a punchline. It's basically the hipster, post, I guess, maybe it's millennial hipster comedy stylings is not trying.
Well, it's so referential,
no matter what you're faced with.
You don't have to be clever anymore. Like you were talking about Richard Pryor. I mean, that stuff is, if you watch it today, it's generally still very funny. There's so much the audience wants.
It's cleverness.
Oh, absolutely. It's timeless.
Yeah.
And then everybody now would just, oh, man, he referenced the Trump. Man, this is good because
well,
Trump.
There was actually an article, I think it was in the Chicago Tribune, saying that the best way to get a great show out of a comic is to heckle them, because then you see what they're really made out of. And to me...
Please don't come to my show.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, well, the reality is, and this is somebody who arguably started as a heckler at Zanies, honestly, because heckling used to be an art form, and it was very specific. It wasn't just some random drunk yelling some random thing. It was actually local comics who wanted to make their bones in a market, watching this comic come through town that had been through 3 years in a row and was doing the same act. And it was so pat and regular that you knew his punchline, and you'd start yelling them before he did.
Wow.
And that was the most brutal form of heckling you could do, was get to the punchline before the guy does. And that was the essence of heck. And then if you kind of test them, bring them out, and then if they attacked you, you could throw some lines up. And then afterwards, you could go up to the club owner and go, can I get 5 minutes? I'm actually funny. And he might actually do it. That really, before Twitter and YouTube and all that stuff, that was kind of your way of, elbowing your way into a scene. Now it's a great way to get yourself blackballed by the agency of the comic that you were performing with.
No kidding.
So if they find out it was you, that's that.
Yeah,
and so nobody really does that anymore. The only people who heckle are just kind of the random
drunks.
Who really don't have anything, so it's like they're chucking paper wads at you while you have a bazooka laying on the ground next to you, and you kind of go, it's almost not worth it.
Oh, I agree. But by the way, this is Hal Sparks. And when you're at Zany's on Sunday, because you guys should all go see him, he's got a special event this Sunday, the 24th. The showtime is at 7:30. You can go to zanies.com, click on the calendar. You'll see his lovely photo right there. Such a great headshot, by the way. Will you photograph so well? It's Hal Sparks. Can you hold on with us? And I want to talk to you about the Republican National Convention when we come back.
Oh, indeed.
Yes, please. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining us on the line is Hal Sparks, who's performing this Sunday at Zany's on Wells in Old Town. The show is at 7:30. And before we talk about anything else, I just got a text from our host that comes on right after me. He wanted me to tell you how amazing, how much he loves you, that you rule. There was a word before that I can't say on the air. That's Nick DiGilio wanted to say hi.
It was very flirty.
Cool. That's awesome. Thank you, Nick, and right back at you, including the language. And I that's an issue that I have currently, having been on the shows that I've been on and being on the show that I'm currently on, that there are language limitations about people's excitement. Although it is fascinating in this modern era to have a gay couple who can now adopt very excited, and their kids who are adopted being very excited, and neither one of them can make the other one understand why. It's really
Well, I have to agree with when it comes to language, because I do too. When people come see my stand-up comedy shows, I have to let them know on the air, if you come see me, I'm an adult and I can do any kind of show. I'll do a church show, and then I've got my third show, Zanies, that I've got to make sure that I keep people's attention. So it's run the gamut.
Mine's like a TED Talk with Tourette's these days. Like, you kind of almost have to bring a calculator and one that will, you can type in 58008 as well. So there,
Nice throwback.
Think about it for a second.
don't worry about it. How much of the convention are you watching this week?
Most of it. I mean, I have to, certain parts of it, I have to kind of zone out on, because it's, there are parts of it, it's like a commercial where they just throw up the logo. Most of us will watch an ad for the funny part, and then the minute it goes to Geico, you're like, oh yeah, of course it's a Geico ad or whatever. You kind of blow that part of it off. And most of the stuff with the vitriol about Hillary is sort of the brand of this particular thing. But I love how they have managed, keep in mind, how he runs this campaign and this convention is indicative of how he'll run the country.
Right.
And there has literally been a monkey wrench in the machine every single night. And it's a couple of cases twice a night. I don't hold out a lot of hope for his ability to actually do the job. As much as I know people love the idea of, movements and revolutions and people stirring up the establishment,
right.
I have to remind them that technically the Constitution is an establishing document, so establishment isn't necessarily a bad word, and revolution has really become like the 6-minute abs of modern democracy. You don't have to eat and exercise and think and vote and work hard for more than one election in a row. You just need to get a sort of a voter lap band. Let me be your political lap band. Just elect me and then go back to sleep. And I think there's always a problem, when that's the prevailing theory. And I think both Bernie and Trump sort of capitalized on that thought form this round.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And the rhetoric, too, when it comes to the Trump campaign has been sort of startling from the very beginning when he announced and said that, Mexico sends their worst people, including rapists and drug dealers. And people say they love that because he says what's on his mind and he's not worried about being PC. And yet when you have people protesting and saying that their lives are in danger and Black Lives Matter, they're like, oh, don't say that. You're just stirring up trouble.
That's right. Yeah. Free speech goes in one direction. That's sort of the Fox methodology, which is why he can call them from bed in his slippers. And that's news. Because as much as they accuse the liberals or the left being all tied up with Hollywood and the cult of personality, the minute Scott Baio will be here, bang, you're allowed.
Right.
The salivation machine starts on high heat, and it's kind of bizarre to me. But Trump is exemplary of where the party unfortunately has been going. I mean, I'm not one of these people who necessarily hates the idea of a two-party system. I think ultimately our two-party system would probably be better served if it was the Democrats versus the Greens, because the compromise there would actually be more about governance and less about, saber rattling and nonsense. But in this particular, this is exactly where the Republican Party has been headed for the last four cycles. The irony is, I don't know if you have heard, all the kind of speeches, but almost everything they're saying about Trump, if they'd have said it about Romney, I'd have believed them, kind of. But when they're saying it about Trump, they don't even think it's true. That's the weirdest thing. Donald is such a happy and go lucky guy who does what he says and says what he does and knows more than you even know and is so kind. We all know he had all the Black people removed when he came to visit his construction site. Don't pretend that you don't know that. It was one of the selling points.
It's loyalty to a fault,
really
though.
Rich guy.
Right.
Don't you have to kind of tip your cap to somebody who's willing to literally probably die for their cause? You know what I mean? Like, yeah, you're absolutely wrong, but that lady or Trump or whoever at the convention is like all the way Trump and ignoring the fact that he's absolutely the worst in most people's opinion. Like, there's got to be a little respect for that. Like, you're sticking to your guns when you still have them.
Yeah, I don't think they're sticking to their guns. I think they're gripping their guns white knuckled because they think other guns are pointed at them that aren't. That's what concerns me. They think they're under fire. For, you know, this is the kind of the world where, like, Bill O'Reilly, when he's critiqued about what he's saying, thinks his free speech rights are being violated. It's, you know, and it's no. This is how free speech works. Both sides are allowed to criticize the response and the answers of each side. The reality is most of those people who are vehemently anti-Hillary are really, for the most part, buying a line that they've been sold since 1994, hardcore, you know, and it's not, oh, well, she's going to, you know, add to the debt or whatever. It's that she, you know, she and her husband, you know, murdered Vince Foster and that, you know, they personally wanted Benghazi to go south. Like that kind of crazy, like middle of the night trucker radio kind of stuff that they are absolutely sold on. Because what's the other alternative? The alternative is look at your guy and really ask yourself, no matter what you believe, if this is your principled belief, I'm totally cool with that, but is that the guy to shepherd it? That's the hard part. So that's why I think they're so like, Hillary must go to jail.
Oh, I agree. I mean, the fact that they have posters with Monica Lewinsky on it at the convention, I mean, how is that something that you're also dredging up?
I remember that happened as well.
Yes.
It's very strange.
That occurred. That was another example of much ado about nothing, where Republicans spent a lot of taxpayer monies a la Benghazi and ended up empty-handed. So try to find something else to make their fishing trip worthwhile. You know, so they're literally going on a fishing trip and coming back with the bottom of the boat. Look what we caught. Like, it's the silliest.
I have a feeling Brandon wants to talk more, but I have to go to the news. Hal, I don't want to keep you longer, but if you want to come back, hold on, we can continue our conversation. I don't know if you've...
I'm a fan. Sure. I'm awake anyways. It's
all right.
The nature of being on the road.
Craig just got excited. He's going to play some more Lab Rats music, I think, even when we're not on the air. I think we're putting in an episode. We are hanging out with Hal Sparks. He's appearing at Zany's this Sunday night. You can go to zanys.com for ticket information. The show is at 7:30. It's the Zany's on Wells in Old Town. And I love that they're calling you a Chicago native. Do you consider yourself to be a Chicago native?
Absolutely.
All right.
Yeah, favorite city in North America, hands down.
Chicago's very own Hal Sparks is going to be at Zany's.
That's right.
And he's agreed to hang out with us a little bit longer, I hope. Well, I don't want to take up all of his time, but this is too much fun. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, and really glad that our guest, Hal Sparks, has agreed to stay on the line with us. He's appearing this Sunday at Zany's on Wells in Old Town. You can go to zanys.com for ticket information. The show is at 7:30, and it's a special event because he's a great guest, and I have been a fan of his for many years, all the way back to Talk Soup. Craig is a fan, Lab Rats, and so many other things. Queer as Folk is the music that you just heard. And we were talking about the Republican National Convention before the news. And my regular guest, Brandon C. Price, who joins me in the studio, is often the counterbalance to conversations that we have when it comes to social and political issues. And he was he had to push his mic away at one point.
This is so overblown.
You're not overblown. You are often the counterbalance.
No,
when we talk about gun control.
That's absolutely true. My anger at Hal has been overplayed, I feel like.
No, you're not angry at him, but you wanted to say things.
No, I mean, I think you're absolutely right about there's so much of the conservative party that is just so like brainwashed, anti-Hillary, anti-that. And they don't take anything, truth or otherwise, into consideration. But I think something you hit on earlier was that the thing that Bernie and Trump both capitalized on is like a real thing, even for smart people. That like we're like the establishment is so disgusting that you really sit there at night or in the shower going, I mean, I know I wouldn't vote for Trump, but like, would I? I mean,
no.
Like, do you want your racism blatant or systemic? Like, it's coming at you either way.
Here's my issue with that. From both a liberal and conservative standpoint, all the markers, but for obvious ones, say like what's going on with Black Lives Matter and the necessity of dealing with the, you know, the number of black men shot by comparison to white perpetrator shot in the same kind of circumstances, all that stuff. As a society, over time, we're moving in better directions according to the normal gatherings of conservative and liberal on both sides. We're becoming a much more socially liberal country. Libertarianism is rising mainly because of that. And even on a financial level, the stock market is at 18,000. There's been wage stagnation, but that's actually part of, like, entrenched corporate structure. That's not because the government isn't passing the right bills. That's because there's no impetus to raise wages across the board. And that's not something that I think conservatives would argue would be handled by fiscal policy from the government. As a matter of fact, they want as much hands-off as possible. And nothing is really throttling it. And, you know, there's no bottleneck caused by legislation about wages. The reality is that violent crime's been on it, you know, is at a 20-year low, and the stock market's at 18,000. The reality is a lot of people who don't know why they're upset, and they're just freaking out. And their assumption is the world is on fire. It must be that it can't be me. It's got to be the outside world. And that's true of, I think, social justice warriors, and I think it's true of the tricorn hat people at the RNC this weekend.
Well, now I'm going to take this hat off. No, I think so, but that, like, you know, absolutely. Republicans, hardcore conservatives, they have the money already. They have no impetus to change the wages, the way things are dealt with. But, I mean, you look at I always bring it back to campaign finance reform, and when I see somebody like Hillary, I mean, you know, why does CNN put her on all the time? Oh, that's right, because they're her biggest campaign contributors. That is the problem on both sides, and I think it's unfair to just say, well, the Republicans are really that issue. Everybody's doing that.
As part of the Democratic platform and as part of her policy papers, she wants to repeal Citizens United. It wants to be, she said it's one of the first acts when she gets into office. I don't know that Trump has said anything even close to similar. I don't even know that he knows the name Citizens United. I think he makes the thing that I'm self-funding as part of his storyline, which makes him kind of the billionaire class version of Bernie in his mind. But the reality is he isn't doing that. He loaned his campaign the money, and the campaign's going to pay it back even when he loses.
I completely agree. I just don't think that – I think Hillary's just going to say pretty much anything to get in because she's such a politician. Believe me, she will have my vote. I would never do that to you or the country. I completely agree. Right. At the end of the day, that is the right way to go. I guess I'm just so disenfranchised and so upset with the situation, like we said earlier, Patty, where it's not you're voting for who you think is best for the country. You're voting for who you hate slightly less. And that is
that's
a real problem
for everybody.
That's where my point is. I think that's an establishment issue, and I think you can come in and you can repeal Citizens United all you want. You're still getting billions and billions of dollars, and it's not just her. Absolutely not. It's the entire Congress. It is the fact that these people take money to be elected, to keep their jobs, and take a bunch of money. Why would anyone ever change it, Republicans or Democrats?
Well, a lot of them float out. Evan Bayh's coming back into Indiana to run basically to short shrift around Evan Bayh, Mike Pence. Because they knew the Democrats were going in. That was their Machiavellian move to protect themselves. They've got basically a chess move for everybody that Trump could have picked. Mm-hmm. And they moved Evan Bayh in there to absolutely do that. He was one of the worst examples of the revolving door on the Democratic side. I'm not a fan. And I do think that repealing Citizens United will have a major impact on things. But I also think that, you know, it's not like Trump is for public financing, whereas that is now part of the Democratic platform. There's a difference between actually doing that. It's not just Hillary saying it to get elected. It's the Democratic platform.
Would it have been, though, if that issue wasn't – like Bernie, like they say that he raised a lot of those issues. He made those issues be a platform. Do you think that Hillary, like from a standpoint like this is who I am as a human and therefore what I believe, do you think she would have gone that route? Again, not trying to vilify her, but if it hadn't been pushed.
About her. Citizens United was the production company that made the anti-Hillary, you know, the Hillary's America kind of documentary that vilified her as the Vince Foster murdering sociopath who helped her husband, you know, rape half a dozen women. That's what that movie was about. And they wanted to show it in theaters. And Citizens United was, you can't do that. There's a difference between political ads and entertainment. And you can't spread the money evenly around. And the Supreme Court established that you could. And that there has to be an amendment to protect that. So, yeah, I think she has a dog in that fight. I think right now, I don't think any Democrat, including Obama, was saying, I'd love to overturn this. but I'm not going to pants myself in a general election in front of the Republicans who don't care about that.
Valid.
They're just going to raise money bulletproof. So at a certain point, I get that it's a great idea, but I think it's almost like, okay, your move on a political level, because would you do that? You're up against, you believe in everything you believe in. You have your core beliefs and you actually want to get bills through. You believe in things like SCHIP and universal health care and all these kind of things. And then you go, but I'm not going to take any money, you know, above this certain marker because it's a matter of principle, while the other guy steamrolls you with $4 billion. It would make no sense whatsoever.
But
what you do is you get into office, that is part of your policy, get the amendment in, and then everybody's on the same playing field. But until then, you have to fight like it's meaningful. Otherwise, you're just handing the reins over to the other party.
But right? Don't you owe that person who gave you the billions of dollars? Now you're in, and now if you push this legislation, they're going to be super pissed and not give you any money for reelection and, in fact, attack you and attack against you. So where do you draw that line?
It's a little less quid pro quo than that. I mean, if you look at Hillary's, the speeches, which get a lot of noise about her, you know, the Goldman Sachs, she got $200,000 from Goldman Sachs. She got $250,000 from UCLA for the same speech, essentially. And so if you believe that whoever's putting the money in your pockets is automatically controlling you, she's actually under the thumb of the UC Regents of California more so than she is any bank, because they paid her more money. She earned more money from college speeches than she did from bank speeches. That's just the reality. So you either believe that everybody's on the take or they aren't. In this case, Donald Trump is effectively just running to raise the value of his own real estate, because every piece of policy he changes affects where he's going to build his next hotel. And right now he's getting CIA briefings that are going to tell him exactly where we're putting bases and pulling them out and doing all kinds of stuff around the world, which is basically just working with his, you know, his construction team to go, that'd be a good place. That'll be a nice, safe place for, you know.
Is he already getting intel from the CIA as part of this
campaign? Yeah, absolutely.
And this is where, and obviously this has come up a lot with everyone saying, you know, I saw Governor Walker say today, I wouldn't give her my password. You heard the FBI director say that she's irresponsible and it was wildly, you know, careless of her.
The biggest joke about the email controversy is David Petraeus was busted giving secrets to his mistress via Gmail.
She seemed really trustworthy, though.
Colin Powell was using Yahoo as his private email server, and they sent classified information back and forth. She sets up a server in her house for her private email, basically to not have the ability for a giant corporation to be able to fish it, and she's the one who's called out as the more dangerous one. If you're thinking, if it was between you and I, and we were saying, what's the most secure way for me to run a personal email, not my State Department stuff, but my own personal email, what would be the best methodology? Use Gmail or set up a server in-house by a private security team that I've vetted?
Why is that so hard to get across? I don't know why it's so hard to get across to people.
I don't know, because it's the silliest thing I've ever heard. And like I said, David Petraeus, who, by the way, the Republicans would have loved to have run and think he was hung out to dry, actually said, as head of the CIA, I thought Gmail was secure. That is the most ridiculous.
I didn't know he said that.
My grandmother wouldn't say that. Like, who sends nude pics over Gmail? Like, you just know that every tech there is printing them out and putting them on the wall of nudes. But David Petraeus, as head of the CIA, thinks that Gmail is secure. Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton goes, I'm not running my mail, my private mail, through any corporate server. We're going to set up a server in my home.
There are so many things that people get angry about when it comes to Hillary Clinton. And what they've been doing at the convention this week is also manipulating people with stories of grief when it comes to Benghazi.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Fear and sadness.
A lot of fear. And I've had this conversation over and over again. And people talk about how, well, you know, when Benghazi was under attack, she came out and said it was because of the videos. And then it became a whole PR mess. What are your thoughts on that? That she originally had said it was because of this.
That was the CIA assessment at first. They got new information, and it wasn't. And then the CIA ultimately went back to it after they gathered all the people and ended up catching the other nine people that they were trying to round up. There was a mix of human beings who had planned and were waiting for a moment of opportunity. And then they also attracted in their attack people who were ginned up by the video. Both were true.
And that's what I've said. I've said that there were attacks in other places because of the videos, but people are like, no, there weren't. And I that was my understanding.
There were dozens of them in the area. Right.
Certainly.
And everybody knew it at the time. And as a matter of fact, there was a big story about, you know, well, that's why they hate us for our freedom. We can put out a movie that upsets people and we don't go kill people over it. That was a big story, as it should be, because it is one of the most valuable things about our society. We are awesome in that regard when we get it right, is that you can be who you are and say what you want to say without somebody killing you for it with by a state sanction or religious sanction, you know. I as an American, appreciate that greatly.
You know, yeah, I'll second that.
It's kind of important to our existence, you know. And in this particular case, these folks don't think that way. They think that you should die if you look at them sideways, and it, you know, on a religious or philosophical or political way. And that's what led up to a lot of this. And again, we have blowback from the Middle East that goes back decades. That's a Gordian knot of geopolitical and philosophical and religious problems, period. However, there are some baseline things you can understand. And one of them is that certain groups in society don't handle criticism well. And when you get them up against the wall, they act violently.
Well, that's
white supremacists do it. Islamic jihadists do it. The Dallas sniper. These are not people who are thinking through, you know, to a conclusion of what their actions mean in the long term. They are just reactionary and violent and foolish.
Well, and it is
not indicative.
I've been talking to people about cognitive dissonance when it comes to your opinion is not your identity, but that's how we're all reacting.
That's very true.
When someone challenges your belief system,
and
people are losing their minds. Hal, I could do this for the rest of the show. And Brandon, did you want to say one more thing?
I want everyone to know that I'm not going to vote for Trump. And my whole thing is it just sucks that it's not like this is our candidate. She's going to change some things. It's just the lesser of two evils. And that's why I think a lot of people, smart and dumber.
Evil, there's a huge drop off. You know what I mean? Between a serial murderer and a guy who keys your car.
I agree.
Lesser of two
completely.
Evils in that agreement. But it's a huge shift. And there is something about, like, everything that they say that's Machiavellian about her, that's controlling or that she's manipulative or whatever. To some degree, that shows skill as leader. If she's managed to get through all these minefields and still get there, there's something impressive about that. At least as impressive as the other deal, you know, which is Ghost Rider, by the way.
Yes.
Sociopath.
Yeah, so, not so he should not be trusted with the keys of the White House.
I hire all the best people except the people who talk about me.
Right. Yeah, he's suing that guy. Of course.
Anyways, awesome.
Hal, I'm gonna meet you on for real on in person on Sunday. I look forward to it. Everybody, come see the show at Zany's on Wells, 7:30 showtime. They're usually at 8:30, so this is a special showtime special event with Hal Sparks. He has his own radio show. He's you know him from Talk Soup, Queer as Folk, Lab Rats. Oh, now we're getting phone calls. They all waited to listen, and now they're calling. But we have to run. We've put Brandon Weatherby.
Just put words in my mouth the rest of the show.
I think you do a lovely job on your own. Really great to talk to you, and I look forward to meeting you on Sunday. And
me too.
Follow him on Twitter as well, at Hal Sparks. And have a great night. Yay. Thanks. It was Hal Sparks. More after this on 720 WGN.